Hi everyone, welcome to the Unmissed podcast. Today's guest is Cameron, a globally recognized business growth expert, speaker, and best-selling author. He's the mastermind behind the Second in Command philosophy, which also explores the pivotal role of a chief operating officer, COO, and scaling businesses effectively. Before we dive into today's discussion, here's some food for thought. According to a Harvard Business Review study, nearly 50% of CEOs fail within their first 3 years due to leadership gaps, many of which stem from the lack of strong operational support. Despite this, many businesses underestimate the value of a second in command. Cameron has spent decades proving that a well-structured CEO-COO partnership can drive exponential growth and operational excellence. I'm your host, Chelsea Alves, and I'm thrilled to welcome Cameron to the podcast. Cameron, welcome. To start, can you share
Chelsea,
a little bit
thank
about
you.
Your background?
Sure. Wow, my background. I was groomed as an entrepreneur. So I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Both sets of grandparents ran their own businesses. My father ran his own company, raised the three kids to all run our own businesses. So my sister, my brother, and myself have all run our own companies for 25-ish years. It's all I've ever really known. And then I got to work behind the scenes with a couple of really strong, successful CEOs as their COO, as their second in command. Brought to grow some really nice brands. I got involved in the very early days with a company called College Pro Painters, which went on to become the largest residential house painting company on the planet. I opened the West Coast of the United States for them. Then I was a partner in a group that became Gerber Auto Collision in the United States, Boyd Auto Body in Canada. It's now the largest collision repair chain in the world. When I started, they had seven locations. Now they've got a few hundred, about a $2 billion company. Then I was this president of a private currency company, which we built and sold, took that company public. And then I joined my best friend, Brian, to scale his business. I joined as employee number 14 in a company called 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And when I left 6.5 years later, we had 3,100 employees system-wide, had scaled that to four countries and 330 cities. They're now an $850 million revenue business. And then, yeah, left there 17 years ago, started writing books, coaching CEOs, and I've been paid to do speaking events now in 29 countries and on every continent. I got paid to speak in Antarctica 3 years ago. That's
amazing.
Bit of a background. It was fun.
Yeah, I bet. It sounds like one of the coolest places possible to speak at. To start, your background's extremely impressive. The fact that all of your kids own businesses too, I think is just a testament to your, success and some of those companies you worked for are so well known and recognized. So it's so great to have you on today. Yeah. I'd love to dive into your book, The Second in Command. It really highlights the importance of the COO role. Why do you think this position is often overlooked in discussions about leadership?
In early stage companies, I think often entrepreneurs feel like they have to be good at everything and they start hiring people and they tend to focus around the kind of marketing and the tech stack. And they forget that if they have an operational kind of yin and yang partner that can free up the entrepreneur to focus on their unique ability, that will really springboard the company at the same rate that hiring an amazing marketer will or an amazing head of IT to kind of leverage the tech stack. Once they get it, and that tends to be in the mid-sized organizations, that's when the companies do really kind of scale and they do understand it. I think almost every, anybody in the Fortune 500, there's a COO in that company. Most mid-sized organizations, when you get to the 300 plus employees, tend to have an operational head. So that tends to be where it's getting well known. Earlier stage companies, I think people give out titles that are too big too early. So that's a problem that we can talk about. People give the COO title to somebody who's really more of a director of operations.
What would, speaking of, people getting that title too early, what would you say are some of the key traits that make a great COO and what kind of background should they have?
So the best traits for a COO are people that are really good at strong cross-functional decision-making. If you're the head of marketing, you have to be amazing at marketing. The head of IT, you have to be amazing at IT. If you're the COO, you have to be amazing at people. So at leading people, at running process, at running collaboration, running strategy, getting all the departments thinking and working together. So they have to be very strong on the people side of the business, and they have to be functionally understand all the business areas, but they don't have to have the deep domain expertise of a business area. So they need to understand marketing. They need to understand IT. They need to understand finance. They need to understand HR. They need to understand the areas enough to be able to get that collaboration happening. That tends to be, I think, a really strong point most COOs are good at.
How do they typically complement the strengths of the CEO?
Yeah, good question. So let's say that you're the head of marketing for a SaaS company. You could probably be the head of marketing for any SaaS company. If you're the COO, you have to be the yin and yang match to the entrepreneur. So you have to match the skills of that entrepreneur. Anywhere that they're weak, you have to be strong. You have to match the areas that the entrepreneur doesn't like. You have to really like those areas because you're really kind of taking all that stuff off their plate. So it's a very weird role that way. In some companies, marketing reports to the COO. In some, it doesn't. In some, IT reports to the COO. In some, it doesn't. Some, finance does. So it's really that weird yin and yang balance. It's almost like if I was walking down the road, if I was single and I was looking for a wife, and I'm like, oh, you used to be a wife. You used to be married. Oh, you'd be great as my wife. No, we don't know anything about each other. But if somebody's really good at the head of IT for a SaaS business, they're probably going to be good at head of IT for any SaaS company. So it's that weird balance where you're looking for someone that has the right behavioral traits, they have the right skill set, they have the right personality profile, and they've scaled a company or scaled an organization that's going to go through this next stage. They've already done that once or twice before. You know, when I joined 1-800-GOT-JUNK, it was such a small company. I really wasn't there to be there for the long term. I was there to coach my best friend and help him scale it. But we ended up that 8 or 9 of the core 10 things that need to happen over the next 3 years, I knew how to do them all because I'd done it twice already. I'd already built 2 other franchise companies to very large scales. So I'd already done what needed to be done. And he was my best friend already. He'd been my best man at my wedding before I even started to work for him. So we had the trust. We knew each other. We fit perfectly. And I'd already done what needed to be done. So we had a bit of an unfair advantage.
Yeah. But that makes sense, having that trust and in place. I feel like, yeah, they're going to be working alongside each other so closely that you need to have those compatible personality types to, you know, ensure that it's seamless and you work well together.
Yeah, and it means that the company, when you're looking to hire a head of operations, when you're hiring that second in command, you need to have really good interviewing systems and reference check systems and cultural systems to screen out all the candidates to ensure that you know who you're getting. Because you can't bring somebody in and wait 3 months or 6 months or 12 months to figure out if it's going to work. Brian sadly made that misstep after hiring me. He hired the head of Starbucks worldwide, the president of Starbucks North America, I'm sorry, to come in as my replacement. And she had run, you know, Starbucks North America, multi-unit operations, very strong leader, really strong leadership teams, great marketing, but she culturally didn't mesh with the organization. She didn't believe in the entrepreneurial side of the business. She didn't like the franchisees' opinions. So even though she had all the skills, she culturally didn't mesh. And then all of a sudden, a year later, she'd almost bankrupted the company. She took them from $106 million down to $70 million. Brian took another full year to have to unwind all that. So yeah, it's a tough role to hire for because you're not just looking for skills, you're looking for that cultural mesh too.
Yeah, I mean, it seems many companies, you know, struggle with leadership dynamics at the top, you know, not even necessarily just CEO and COO. And you really evidenced that in your last example. What are some of the biggest mistakes you see when CEOs and COOs don't align properly, and how can they fix that?
Well, there's certainly conflict. It's almost like a husband and wife in a traditional marriage. If the husband and wife are not meshing well, there's all the fights and the arguments and the disagreements, and the kids feel kind of caught in the middle of it all. When the CEO and COO are not in sync, when they're not meshed, when they're not aligned, when vision's not meeting strategy or vision's not meeting execution, when they're on different pages, the rest of the leadership team feels that kind of uncertainty. They feel the disjointedness. So they really do have to stay on the same page, right? The CEO has to really be very aware as to what the plan is and how the execution is happening. And the COO has to stay very in sync with the culture and the core values, the core purpose, and the vision of what the CEO wants to create.
Yeah, so it sounds almost like they need to keep that consistent line of communication with each other and be very transparent, and foster a culture of collaboration.
Yeah, and I even talk about date night. They need to get out of the office together and spend some time together to stay in sync and to like each other as humans, right? They need to stay away from the rest of the kids so that they get to stay in sync and like each other and work on stuff and to make sure that you can almost complete each other's thoughts. I think it's really important to be able to do that.
I think in your books, you often talk about how growing your people is the key to growing your company. Can you share some
Yeah.
strategies businesses can use to develop their leadership teams effectively?
Yeah, the first one I think even comes before the strategy of building the teams, and it just comes from the awareness that a leader's core job is to grow people, right? The more that we can grow the skills and the confidence and the connections of our people, the more that they can take on, the more that they can deliver, the easier their job is going to be, the faster the results are going to be, the more results we can get from less people faster. Our job is to grow them, and it's to get results through them. Right. I think when a leader realizes that their to-do list does not have their name on it, it's just a list of stuff that needs to get done. The starting point should be who can I delegate everything to? And if you have something on your list, like, oh, I have nobody I can delegate this to, pick someone and then grow their skills, grow their confidence, and grow their connections so they can do that thing. But keep delegating more and keep the focus on growing people. And I think when leaders do that, when you kind of flip the org chart upside down like an inverted pyramid, where the leader is at the bottom supporting the VPs, who are supporting the managers, who are supporting the front line, who are supporting the customers, you end up building an incredible organization that way. But when you're kind of top down managing and telling people to do stuff in a specific way, you're really missing the point.
I love that philosophy, and I think that's such a great idea. I feel like in fast scaling companies, a lot of them kind of fail to do this. And I was wondering, what are some of the best ways to ensure employees stay engaged and that they stay aligned with with company goals?
Yeah, so the big one is to make sure they're aligned first with the vision of the organization and then the goals second. So the vision is where are we going? What's the company look like in the future? What's our BHAG? What's our core purpose? What are our core values? What's our vivid vision for what our company looks like, acts like, and feels like 3 years in the future? And if everyone's aligned with that, then you can come up with the goals to make that happen and the projects or plans to make those come true. And then people see that the work that they're doing is a part of a project or a part of a plan or a part of a goal to drive that vision. So they see the alignment in what they're doing. So it's making sure that they're always aligned with that greater purpose. I tell a story about, these three guys 100 years ago sitting out in the dirt making bricks. And you ask the first guy, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm making bricks." And you ask the second guy, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm building a left wall of a church, and I'm making the bricks to build the left wall of the church." And the third guy says, "What are you doing?" He said, I'm making bricks to build the left wall of the Sagrada Familia. It's going to be the most incredible cathedral in Barcelona to worship God. It's going to take us over 100 years to build this cathedral, but I get to make the bricks that are going to be on the left wall of the cathedral." So they're all doing the same job, but the person that sees the vision of what they're doing and the purpose of what they're doing has more meaning and more excitement. So again, it's less about the goals, because the goal could be to make a whole bunch of bricks, but the inspiration of why we're doing that gives people meaning. And I think that's what's really important for people.
Yeah, I think that's amazing advice and completely agree. You've clearly worked with a wide range of companies, from startups to large enterprises. What's your advice to businesses that are hitting a growth ceiling and struggling to scale?
Wow, great question. So I think if you're hitting a growth ceiling, it usually comes down to a lack of vision for the entrepreneur, where you're either nervous or unsure that you can push that envelope even further. So surround yourself with other good leaders. Plug yourself into multiple mastermind communities where you're around other growth-minded people. There's that old saying, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. But when you actually surround yourself with other people and are inspired by other people, it stretches you. Like last night, I'm in Melbourne, Australia right now. Every time I'm in a new city, I host a dinner for random CEOs and COOs. Last night, I met somebody who just acquired a 75-year-old Australian firm, and he was walking me through how they did it. And it was very inspiring, and it stretched me, right? I was sitting with the head of a a big digital marketing agency, and he runs all the biggest digital marketing conference in Australia. It's kind of like the traffic and conversion of Australia. And he stretched me. And, you know, so it's when you're around those people and it stretches you, I think that allows you to remove the glass ceiling. And then the next one is remembering to always up-level your team and up-level your people, right? If you're hitting that ceiling, it's often because your people aren't stretching and aren't seeing the ways to build something bigger. But it usually starts with vision and with, you know, a CEO. It can also be a little bit of burnout on the CEO's part where they're just, they've kind of done it. They've gotten to where they want to get to, and they don't really have that desire to build anything bigger. But it's usually not a market problem or a product problem. It's usually a vision and a leadership problem.
Yeah, it always ties back to the vision. What are the key signs that a company needs to bring in or optimize their COO role?
Well, I guess the first starting point is when the CEO recognizes that they're working in parts of the business that drain them of energy or that they're not really good at, so they don't have time to work in their unique ability. That's a good starting point. A second one is when the CEO realizes they don't have time to lead and grow people, right? That maybe they've only got 30 minutes a week to work with somebody or an hour a week to spend time with their head of IT. That's not enough time, right? When the leader's core job is to grow people, spending time with your team, spending time with your customers, spending time with the media, spending time thinking about culture, spending time thinking about your industry. If you don't have time for that, if you're so busy in the day-to-day, that's a huge sign that you're missing an opportunity to scale somebody, right? When you bring in that right second in command, they should be able to take a bunch of stuff off your plate to free up so that you work on the stuff that's really, really good at, that really gives you more energy. That's really what fuels the organization. So that's probably the key starting point.
If a business owner or CEO is listening to this and they're wondering how to better utilize their second in command, what would you say is the first step they should take?
To really get the second in command to understand the vision of what you're growing. So they're really clear on your vivid vision, your BHAG, your core purpose. So I'll give an example that's very specific. When I joined Brian at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, he gave, and this was, again, going back 24 years ago now, which is crazy, but he showed me a 2-page description of what he wanted his company to look like in 3 years. And every sentence was kind of a future state. And I'm like, I can make that come true. I can make that come true. I know how to do that. He's like, I don't even know how to do this. I'm like, well, I can do 80% of these sentences. I can make these come true. So I was very inspired and excited about making that come true. And then the next thing he said was he wanted to build a globally admired brand, which meant that everything that we did had to be something that people said, wow, about, right? We were always talking about the pursuit of wow. And so what could we do? What that meant, our interviewing had to be wow. Our culture had to be wow. Our branding had to be wow. So everything we did had to be that big stretch. You know, the reason we got Simon Sinek to be on our board 5 years before he wrote the book Start With Why was we were so enamored with his skills and his understanding that we found a way to plug him in. Everything was building a globally admired brand. Our core values were something that we obsessed over, right? So we hired people against the core values. We fired people if we broke the core values. We celebrated the core values. I got a mentor who was being groomed as the CEO at Starbucks to mentor me because they were such a great organization. So Greg was able to mentor and grow me. Everything was aligned with that. And I think when a CEO can get their COO to be aligned with those things, that's really what's going to stretch the COO to build an even greater company. But if Brian had just come in and said, you know, okay, let's get to work, let's grow this. It's a junk business. We're just hauling garbage. There's nothing exciting about that. And there was only 14 people and there was ripped carpeting. Like, there was nothing exciting in the day to day. The excitement was the vision of what we wanted to build. That's what got me jazzed.
What is one piece of advice you'd give to aspiring COOs looking to grow into their role and to have a greater impact?
I think it's to remember, well, there's two parts. One is to be a self-driven learner. And I call it just-in-case learning versus just-in-time learning. I think often people are learning stuff, reading the next business book because somebody said to read it. That's just-in-case learning, right? You're reading stuff just in case you maybe need it in the future. What I like to do is look at the core projects I'm working on this quarter and then say, what's all the stuff that I can read and watch and learn and devour to get better at those things that I'm actually working on. That's just in time learning. So that's number one for a leader, is keep kind of create your own personal development plan and keep getting better at the stuff that you're working on right now. That's number one. Number two is to remember that none of this shit matters. We're all going to die, right? This is just what we're doing to make money, right? So if we can enjoy the journey and have some fun along the way and detach from how serious we all take all this, if we can, we show up with that better energy, I think that's what floods the organization with more kind of that right energy. Momentum creates momentum. It's quantum mechanics, right? So if we show up with that right energy in the day to day, our team is going to like us. Our team is going to respond to us. Our team is going to resonate with us. It's remembering that none of this stuff actually matters.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I feel like your energy, you know, really translates into your work and it can affect those mm-hmm. around you. So yeah, it's definitely important to have and try and maintain that positive mindset. I think, you know, it's a little trite to say, but the business landscape is changing rapidly. What do you see as the biggest leadership trends shaping the future of company growth and operations?
Yeah, I just spoke to a group of 2,500 people about a month ago in Dubai. I was speaking at the Mindvalley Future Human event, and I said that, you know, and it's become a bit of an adage now that people have been saying in the last year or so, AI is not going to replace you, but somebody using AI is going to replace you. And I think leadership needs to bring that kind of a mentality and a mindset into the organization, that everyone inside of the organization has to start looking at leveraging AI on a daily basis. We have to be able to share, hey, I just used AI to do this. Here's what I did. Kind of sharing the tips and tricks with each other so we all learn what the possibilities are. But we really need to adapt or die very quickly. I remember about 30 years ago, the first time I was in Australia, I saw someone wearing a T-shirt. With a Nike t-shirt, and on the back had this kind of paragraph, and it said, somewhere right now, someone is practicing, and when they meet you in head-to-head competition, they'll beat you. And I think we need to bring that kind of a mindset of only the paranoid survive, of, you know, adapt or die, because the business landscape is not just changing, it's changing like every week, like yeah. really fast. And if companies are scared of that, you're going to bring that scared fear into the organization. But if you are kind of going on this, you know, let's all learn this, let's all share this. If you're excited about that change, I think you're actually going to be able to ride that wave and be on the front end of that wave. There's another saying that I've been talking and thinking about a lot in the last couple of years. If the rate of change outside your business is greater than the rate of change inside your business, you're out of business. So I think companies really need to adapt to that. This is not a, well, we'll figure it out next year. Next year, this whole landscape has completely changed. Your industry is done.
Yeah, I feel
and
like
that's
it's
true.
More.
That's not only true of your company, that's true of your job, right? If you're in a job today, someone who comes into your job with your 20 years experience, now you have 5 years experience four times in a row, you can get somebody coming in now with 5 years experience and the technology skills to kick your ass. So I think we really have to adapt or die that way too.
Yeah, I think it's so imperative to grow, you know, in every aspect of your career. I know AI is really scary to some people, but I agree with you. If you're not on board and you're not integrating that into your tech stack, if you're a SaaS company, if you're not using it in your current role in some way, if you're in the business world, I feel like you're definitely going to be left behind. And, you know, I've even seen they're starting to have full-on college majors for AI, which is interesting. So it's definitely the future for sure.
Yeah. The future's here.
Yep. It sure is.
Here.
Well, Cameron, this has been such a valuable conversation. You shared so many great insights. Where can our listeners connect with you, learn more about your books and access the resources you offer?
Sure. If you go to CameronHerold.com, it's H-E-R-O-L-D, but CameronHerold.com has links to my online leadership course called Invest in Your Leaders, all six of my books. We also have the YouTube channel and our Second in Command podcast channels. So yeah, that's where they'll get all the information. All the links are on my Cameron Herold website.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your expertise again. For our listeners, if you enjoyed the conversation today, don't forget to subscribe to the Unmissed podcast and leave us a review. Also, be sure to check out unmissed.com for all of your SEO needs. We have a comprehensive suite of SEO tools and solutions to scale SEO seamlessly. And be sure to connect with Cameron and check out his website to learn more. This has been the Unmissed podcast, and I'll see you next time. Thanks.